cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Backtracks, the music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always by John Mariano. How's it going, John?
Corey, when I say, who is the master, you say, show enough.
Yes,
we are doing The Last Dragon tonight, and I could not be more stoked for why we started this podcast.
I was sick with COVID, and John's like, okay, you're going to have to watch The Last Dragon. I'd never seen it before. I knew of it as Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon, but I knew nothing about it. John's like, you got to watch it. So I found it. It was on Amazon Prime. I rented it. I paid money to watch it. And wow, it's an 80s movie. It's the most 80s movie ever.
This movie is a staple of my childhood. It was one of my brother and I, the world would stop when this movie came on HBO, and everything, like, it was the first karate kung fu movie we had ever seen before we had seen any Jackie Chan or Bruce Lee or anybody else. Like, we had seen Bruce Leroy Green of Harlem, fighting Shogunov, the Shogun of Harlem, and Eddie Arcadian. And my Lord, this movie is so 80s, so New York, and the soundtrack is so perfect.
It's so New York. At one point in the film, they're watching a Bruce Lee movie in a movie theater, and everyone is being loud and obnoxious and throwing popcorn around. And two people, for no reason, break out a boombox and start breakdancing in the aisles and then get beat up. I imagine that's what happens to this day in New York movie theaters.
Look, it's not that far off just in general, and going to a theater in New York, that it's loud and obnoxious. And I like to think of it as a fun atmosphere. Like, you can look at it any way you want. But what I love about this movie is it really is a good versus evil tale and the hero's journey, you know, but in the guise of this breakdance kung fu mashup movie. And
it's pretty unbelievable.
You know, I knew you were going to think this was ridiculous. I know you told our friend Mark that, you know, this is the most John movie John could have made you watch. And I take that as one of the highest compliments. It features Vanity and Tamak as, I forgot who Vanity plays in this movie.
Her name is Laura. Laura Charles. She's a VJ.
Yeah. VJ Laura Charles, who's kind of like an inner city Dick Clark. And they do their version, I guess, of Soul Train or something like that, where people go on the show and they dance. And Shogunov just wants to fight Bruce Leroy. Bruce Leroy's dad is Daddy Green, because he's Bruce Leroy Green. Daddy Green's Pizza. And it's Movie Your Pizza to Daddy Green's Pizza. It's an infinitely quotable movie for me. Like, it might not be for you because you've only seen it once now, but I've already thrown a couple of quotes out there. You know, the master you seek is inside of you. There's lessons in this movie. You know, if you're not familiar with it, please go out and watch it. It's on, I think, Amazon Prime right now, or you might have to pay for it. But for the $5, rent the movie and enjoy it. It is 80s cheese of the highest level, but it's a fun Saturday night, Friday night, Sunday night kind of movie.
You mentioned the battle between good and evil. We have two villains in this movie. We have Shogunov, who you mentioned is the Shogun of Harlem. And I asked you after I watched the movie, is he still the Shogun of Harlem, or do we have a new Shogun of Harlem?
No, he's absolutely, like, no one's unseating that guy. Okay. Like, that dude, it's like, for me, it's like the Wicked Witch, Darth Vader, Shogunov are like the three greatest villains in movie history.
Well, what about Eddie Arcadian? I loved him. He's a video arcade mogul. Who kidnaps Laurel Charles to show her a video by his girlfriend Angela, which is of course awful. And then Laura Charles refuses to play her video on her show. So Eddie Arcadian, conspires to destroy her.
So just so you know, my headcanon is Eddie Arcadian survives this movie. He goes to jail. He gets out of jail and he becomes Brian Doyle Murray in Wayne's World and sponsors the Wayne's World show. Right. Like that's my headcanon is like those two characters are one and the same.
Except you want to talk about an actor who really gets into his character. Christopher Murney, who plays Eddie Arcadian. I imagine the only note he got from the director was, okay, you're a bad guy. And he just chews all the fucking scenery. It's wonderful, that performance.
And Corey, do you have the cast list in front of you by chance?
I do, yes.
So Eddie Arcadian's like number one thug, like his sidekick, right? He's the guy from Dumb and Dumber.
Mike Starr, absolutely.
Yeah. Mike Starr, who is trying to kill Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, mm-hmm. and they do the most obnoxious noise in the world, and they poison him with hot sauce, and he dies, right? So he goes on to do that. But he's not the only person to go on to do stuff from this movie. A very young Ernie Reyes Jr. who would go on and be in like the Ninja Turtles movies and do some kung fu movies of himself and became like a B-level celebrity in the 90s to a degree. So he's in this, and then we get some of the bigger names with Chaz Palminteri, who goes on to do a lot of mafia movies and crime movies and very famously A Bronx Tale, and he's done A Bronx Tale as a one-man show on Broadway. They filmed that movie in my old neighborhood, and he plays thug number two in this. So it's a very unknown Chaz Palminteri. And then you got to know this one other super famous face. What was so shameless about this movie that you noticed?
Well, there was actually two. There was a young Keisha Knight Pulliam as Bruce Leroy's sister, Sophia. And
oh, I almost missed The Cosby Show actress. She played Rudy on The Cosby Show.
Right. Yep. It's Keisha Knight Pulliam in one of her first roles. But a young William H. Macy, his character is listed as JJ. I think they may call him JJ. He's only in one scene. His entire character arc was to tell Laura that she had to play this video from Eddie Arcadian's girlfriend or they were going to hurt him. And she was like, no, I'm not doing that. And poor William H. Macy was afraid he was going to get beat up. That was his big role in The Last Dragon.
Yeah, it's it's one of these movies where it has a couple of very familiar faces, but it's really about the hero journey for Bruce Leroy. He teaches at the dojo. He's got this guy Johnny, who's kind of reminds me of like Styles from Teen Wolf. Like he's kind of like the doofy 80s friend who's all sex charged up, but all that pent up. Horny life is going nowhere. Like he's striking out with the women left and right. Vanity is unbelievably beautiful in this movie, and I still have one of the biggest crushes on her.
No, she can't act her way out of a wet paper bag, but she does look pretty good in the movie.
I mean, Corey, if I want you to critique the movie from a technical standpoint, I have to be on the podcast with Mark.
Fair enough. So, John, the song you picked is very specific to something in the movie called The Glow. Maybe explain to the folks what The Glow is.
So The Glow is the upper level. It is like your chi at peak form. And in the movie, Shonuff has The Glow, but he's like the dark side of the force. So he only has The Glow. It's a red glow that goes around his hands. So when he does his kung fu, he fights, or he does his martial arts, he does his fights in such a way his hands glow, and it gives him like this extra power, this higher level. And it's been said that you can reach such a high level of chi that your entire body glows. And not to spoil the movie, but look, it's a 30, you know, pushing on 40-year-old movie at this point. And if you haven't seen it, tough. At some point, Bruce Leroy gets the glow, and when that happens, the song kicks on. When he realizes that the inner power is him, which is kind of the tale of the story, he gets the glow, and it's epic. For me, it's up there with the moment when Darth Vader turns on the Emperor and throws him down the chute, right? When Bruce Leroy all of a sudden catches Shonuff's fist, and his whole body starts to glow yellow, and the red glow starts to kind of sparkle out, and you can see Bruce Leroy realizing, you know, he's achieved this upper level to the point where he can catch a bullet in his teeth, right? Like, it's that kind of movie, folks. So if you're not up for that kind of movie, I don't know why you're listening to our podcast, because that's the kind of movies we celebrate around here.
Now, correct me, this is different than Soul Glow from Coming to America. Is that correct?
Yes, this is very different than Soul Glow. Soul Glow, we may cover on here at some point. I believe was sung by Eddie Murphy in that movie. But the glow, I had three valid options I was looking at off of the soundtrack that we may have to come back and do, because The Last Dragon by Dwight David, right? Or Dwight Davis, yeah. It's like an 8-minute song, and we're running short on time. It's probably where I was going to go tonight, but Corey and I have recorded a couple of episodes of stuff, and he asked not to do the 8-minute song. And DeBarge's Rhythm of the Night is such a great song. Whether we do it from this movie, or I think it's featured in at least one or two other movies, we will be covering DeBarge at some point.
DeBarge, yeah, he's had a couple of soundtrack songs, if I remember correctly. I want to say Ruthless People, he had a song on there, but I'm not quite sure.
But tonight we are doing Willie Hutch's The Glow. And, we've had a big intro. We've covered a lot of the movie. Why don't we get into the song, Corey?
Absolutely. It's a damn long song, so let's start it. This is The Glow from 1985's Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Already, I want to break up my parachute pants and get my ghetto blaster and go do some breakdancing.
Yeah, it's, you know, Corey, it's one of these songs, and, you know, we don't say ghetto blaster anymore. Like, ghetto blaster is not a term we use in 2022. So I have to bring that up. Is, you can call it a boombox, but we do not use that phrase anymore.
Is that culturally insensitive? Am I going to get canceled now?
You won't get canceled, but somebody may call you out for it. So before that, I want to point out, like Corey, as Corey pointed out, you know, he is 87 years old based on the fact he was smoking cigarettes and drinking beer in 85. Yeah. So there's a good chance that Corey is way too old to know what's culturally insensitive or not. So let's cut him a little slack right now.
Thank you for looking out for me, John. I appreciate it.
Now all the masses know that you need to glow, the glow, the grow. If you love to live, you live love hot, you gotta move to the upper level. Cause when you got the glow, there is no stopping what you want to do. Oh.
I don't think we've ever covered the song that defines a movie so well in its first verse. You know, now all the masters, you know, need the glow. You need the glow to grow.
That's right.
This almost sounds like it's a Viagra ad.
If you love to live, you live to love. You got to move to the upper level, which rhymes with nothing. Because when, right, you got the glow, there ain't no stopping what you want to do. Ha! Oh.
Right, but it's all about reaching that upper level, you know, which is essentially reaching a level of chi, and being able to be like the best fighter in the Upper West Side.
Yeah. Don't let go, John, of the power of elevation. That truer words were never spoken.
So here's my question. When Bruce Leroy gets sent to go to the fortune cookie company to try and seek out the master, only to find out that the fortunes are generated by a machine, how let down were you that there wasn't like some kind of master in the fortune cookie company?
I was a little let down. I was expecting a big master. I thought that was kind of going to be a big moment in the movie, but they subvert your expectations, as all classic films do. I should mention too, we talked about that master in the fortune cookie factory. His name was Some Dumb Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, very quietly a brilliant screenplay, right? Like, you don't want to think of it that way because it's so hokey and cheesy, but it's hokey and cheesy in the best ways.
It is. It's pretty ridiculous too. You want to talk about bad acting, vanity. And this young guy, Ty Mack, who had never acted before, and I don't think they even told him what to do in the movie. He just kind of just said stuff. He's a pretty good martial artist, though. But you want to talk about zero chemistry between two human beings, Vanity and Ty Mack, for even only having one name each, pretty ridiculous.
I feel like a broom could have chemistry with Vanity, so I'm going to fault Ty Mack a little bit there.
Okay. But when you're talking about over the top, like if you go in with the right expectations, this movie is deliriously wonderful in all the right ways, but it's fucking ridiculous. We talk about, John, these songs in terms of the scenes. You know, in this scene, we're getting like at one point, help me out here because I don't quite remember. Is this song playing when Shownuff has got the better of Bruce Leroy before Bruce Leroy realizes he's got the glow inside him?
Yeah, and then it also does the whole montage flashback as he's remembering back
right
to other scenes in the movie as he's getting his ass kicked. And then it kicks in, I think, somewhere around mid-song where he catches Shownuff's fist. And it plays, you know, we had done the Rocky episode. I'm pretty sure this entire song plays. When this song ends, he beats Shownuff, but then Eddie Arcadian brings out his gun. And it's like, oh, what does he do now? He catches a bullet in his teeth.
And then it plays again, right? Like they play this.
Well, like, yeah. When he smiles and the bullet is in his teeth, the song, what do you call that? The needle drops again.
Everybody knows that you need to glow, you need to glow, to glow, to glow. And if you love to live the life the way you love to love, you take to give. Cause when you got the glow, you see it on your face, you feel it in your head. People understand that you got the glow, and they'll beware, cause the power's there when you got the glow.
This song actually has some similarities with last week's song, Noisy Way Out, in that it's got a really cool bass groove. in very 80s sounding drums and synthesizers.
Oh, this is like we're in an 80s groove on this show right now, and I'm not complaining. Right? Like you and I had said early on, I think you said on our first episode that we were going to lean heavily into the 80s, and here we are getting as thick as we can, thick as fiends into 80s music, 80s movies, 80s cheese, all of it. I think we talk about the cheese, like you've kind of picked on the acting a little bit in this movie. I feel like these are all the reasons why, like the quality of the sets and all of that is why this movie works for me. I think another thing that works really well is Faith Prince and her character as Eddie Arcadian's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Is so over the top in what that needs to be. She's like the best version of Miss Tessmacher in a movie that's not a Superman movie.
That's a good point. I think we can both agree though that Julius Carey should have won the Academy Award as Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. There's a guy who owned that role from the first frame he was on screen.
Our friend Jeff Saunders was getting all excited about meeting a couple of actors at Star Wars Celebration. And unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to meet any of them. But he was so excited. And to me, like, if I ever get the chance to meet Julius Carey at one of these conventions, I'm all over that. Like, just to hear him say that line once to me in my life, right? I don't care. Like, if I were taking the photo with the photo op with him, and he could do the thing where he like seems like he's catching my fist, and I'm like crouching down, like getting my ass kicked by him, like all of that.
Well, you know what? It might be a little tough because he's dead.
What?
He passed away in 2008. I'm sorry to be the one to break that to you. But Julius Carey died of pancreatic cancer.
That's terrible.
I know. I did want to do that on the air, John, but you were talking so glowingly about meeting Julius Carey. And he used to do like Comic-Cons and stuff, so you would have had that opportunity, but unfortunately, he's no longer with us.
Well, I mean, rest in peace. And look, it's a performance for the ages. Like, we're not just blowing that up because I love this movie. Corey, like, you can't even deny how awesome he is as a villain in this movie.
I can't deny any of that. He is 100% the best part of Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. One of the best performances I've seen in the 80s. This guy, okay, you guess what? You're the Shogun of Harlem. Got it. And he fucking bought into it and played the hell out of it.
When they walk into the movie theater, right, which is, I think, the first time you see him in the movie,
yep.
Right? What was your gut reaction to seeing this guy? Like you knew he was a badass, right?
He was captivated. Like he had his goons with him, and he walked in and they're doing the whole show enough spiel. I'm like, wow, like this guy. Yeah, up to that point, I was a little kind of wary on the movie because Tymac kid can't act worth a fuck. And it's like, okay, he's going to go in the city and try and find this master. And he goes to this Bruce Lee movie where everybody's acting like a dickhead. But once show enough comes in, he commands respect. And that's what popped me into the film.
But what's funny is it's very much like, I don't think people realize how important a great villain is in anything you watch, right? Like WrestleMania struggled in its first two versions, right? WrestleMania's 1 and 2 were not nearly as popular as the third and may not have continued. But pitting Hulk Hogan against Andre the Giant and making Andre the Giant the villain made Hogan into what he was in the 80s.
I'll agree with that. However, I think WrestleMania 1, Hogan had a pretty good villain to work against by the name of Rowdy Roddy Piper, who is, I think, the best villain in professional wrestling history. And they only loved Hogan so much because they hated Roddy Piper.
I think that's fair, and I agree with you, but WrestleMania 2 kind of fell flat on its face.
Yeah, Hogan against King Kong Bundy, yeah, totally. And maybe WrestleMania 1 works a little better if it's just Hogan versus Piper, but they did it as a tag match.
And Piper was a little annoyed with some of the stuff with that match as well, and that's not a fault of Piper. I agree. Piper is, pound for pound, my favorite wrestler of all time. Mm-hmm. Right. And I didn't mean to slight him at all, but there were circumstances in WrestleMania 1 that I believe hurt it in trying to make it feel bigger, I think it ended up being smaller, where WrestleMania 3 being a one-on-one match, and all due respect to Roddy Piper, Andre the Giant, was an event on itself, right? Like, Andre the Giant would win Battle Royals, was like undefeated for a long time, and you know, he wasn't going to lose a match he didn't want to lose, right? It wasn't even my favorite match on the WrestleMania 3 card, but now we're talking about wrestling when we should be talking about the movie. but just to put a button on it, my point being is you're only as good as your villain. It's Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader. It's Dorothy versus the Wicked Witch. It's you know, Bruce Leroy versus Shonuff. And so it might sound ridiculous for us to talk about them in that vein, but you can complain all you want about how whiny Luke Skywalker is. You still want to see him, you know, turn his father back to the good side. The Wicked Witch, you want her to get her comeuppance and Dorothy to throw the bucket of water on her, right? And Tamek, for all you're doing, picking on his acting, you want to see Bruce Leroy discover the glow and kick the snot out of Shonuff. And you get that in this movie. And that's a credit to Shonuff's performance.
Everybody know, and I'm friendly folk. They'll all beware, cause they know that you got the power there. When you got the glow, when you got the glow, they'll all beware, cause they know you got the glow, the glow, the glow.
So nobody can see this, but that entire time, John's been doing shadow kung fu on the Zoom call. It's really quite impressive. I wish we did a video podcast so everybody else can appreciate that as well.
I'm kind of doing the drum moves that Ralph Macchio was doing in Karate Kid 2.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what I'm trying to mimic. I dig this track. Like, I dig the soundtrack. I dig this particular track. You know, we don't have a lot of songs that we cover where we can dance to them. And this is one of those tracks. And I encourage you all to get out of your seats and dance a little bit to the glow.
Hey, we still got 2 minutes left, folks. Get up out of your seats and let's have a little dance party here.
It's one of those bass riffs. It's not the most complicated bass riff, but you bob your head to it, right?
Oh yeah.
Like,
that bass had some stank on it.
Right. And we hear him coming back in. He's like, no, like, doing everything you can to sell this song. And there's not much substance to the song, but there's a lot of style.
Good point. Yeah, if you look at the lyrics, not a lot of substance at all, but style, yeah, it's got that in spades. Kind of an odd little section there in a 5 minute song. Did we really need that part?
Maybe not, but there's some tapping going on there. I don't know. you might have been able to cut that out, but like, who are we to question Willie Hutch?
I guess. Yep. I'm certainly not Willie Hutch.
So I do have a little tidbit for you before we get into the last minute of the song. Eddie Arcadian has a pet piranha.
Yep.
Right? Which is kind of like a piranha on steroids. Piranha? It's like
he doesn't even say it's a piranha, does he? It's just something in a tank.
It's something in a tank that like devours people as if it were a piranha. And it basically looks like it's sitting in battery acid or something. Right?
It's the weirdest fucking thing. I'm like, what's in that tank? And it never does pay off.
Well, at some point they dip somebody's like arm in it and like it rips off the sleeve of a shirt or something. And like, you know, it's like a threat. It's like when I played with my toys as a kid, all my villains had like a fish tank that they would threaten to put people in because of this movie. It was like Cobra Commander had a fish tank and he would threaten to put the G.I. Joes into his fish tank. And to me, that was like one of the greatest weapons. It was that and the quicksand and on the Dagobah playset were my two favorite things to play with and threaten people with.
Did you have a fish tank on the Death Star playset?
I had my parents' fish tank and I would dangle my G.I. Joes into it. My dad had like seahorses and stuff that I'd like threaten to like drown my G.I. Joes in the fish tank and the seahorses were going to eat them or something.
I forgot about the fish tank because, yeah, they keep threatening that something awful's in it. And, you know, Rock goes to like feed it and throws like meat in it and all the water bubbles. You're like, oh, it's something really cool. When are we going to see what's in the tank? And we never do.
No, we never do. But it's so funny because as a kid, I always thought that my two biggest threats to life would be quicksand and like evil fish and fish tanks. I've come across neither, and I'm 45 and
still
counting.
They're still
yeah.
Still
I'm bad. Hoping so, folks. If you have some quicksand, or if you have demonic fish, hit me up on Twitter, John Mariano NY on Twitter. I'd like to see your fish tank and quicksand.
Now we got concentration through elevation.
My brother and I, now we didn't have the gift of lyrics back then. Mm-hmm. And we used to sing The Power of Constipation. When you have the glow, your feelings know when you have the glow. Whatever it is, you have the power of constipation. And that's how we would go with it. And yeah, that was a thing I would sing as a child.
The world's shittiest superhero has the power of constipation. I love in songs where, as it's coming out, they got to say the name of the song, The Glow, just to really drive it.
Low and raspy, right? Like The Glow.
I got some good news for you, John. Christopher Murney, who plays Eddie Arcadian, he's still alive. So if you want to meet him at a Comic-Con, you still got a chance.
I would. He'd be my second or third choice from like the main cast of this movie. I also wouldn't mind meeting William H. Macy or Chaz Palminteri and specifically asking them about their experiences on filming this movie.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. K-Mac is still alive too, and he does cons on occasion by the looks of it. So you can go meet Bruce Leroy himself.
One of my good buddies met K-Mac, had drinks with him at a New York bar several years ago. Oh. Really nice guy, apparently.
Awesome. Pretty good martial artist. I was sure impressed with his physicality in the film, even if his acting maybe wasn't quite up to snuff.
No, and he does a good job like mimicking some of the Bruce Lee stuff towards the end of the movie. And, you know, his job is to sell the fact that he believes in all of this stuff, right? And he's the only person in this world that believes in martial arts the way he does. Like, everyone else thinks his kid brother Richie thinks he's ridiculous. It's sad how bad, how much I know this movie, where I know it down to the characters. Like his number one student's Johnny.
Well, and the kid brother character was such a great character, and that kid again went all out and played that to the hilt. It was fantastic.
Yeah, he's up there with great sidekicks in movie history for me. And you know, all he wants to do is get on Laura Charles's dance show. He has the biggest crush in the world on Laura Charles. Right. Who wouldn't? And you know, thinks his brother's like the biggest nerd in the world until his brother kicks everyone's ass.
And I'm looking at the cast here, and I didn't even realize Vanity passed away.
Yeah, oh, Vanity did pass away several years ago, very sadly.
Yeah, kidney failure. But I never knew she was Canadian, born in Niagara Falls, Ontario.
She was, I believe she was named, like Prince named her Vanity. I think that this was one of the many women over time that Prince said, "You're now Vanity," and like she was Vanity after that. Mm-hmm. Right, like Carmen Electra isn't actually Carmen Electra. Prince walked up to her at a party and said, "You're Carmen Electra," like baptized her Carmen Electra, and she was Carmen Electra after that. Like Prince was very famous for doing stuff like that.
And was she in Purple Rain or just up for Purple Rain? I don't remember.
I'd have to go back and watch it, and we will when we cover Purple Rain, because we will.
It's got to happen at some point. A lot of great songs on that one too. Yeah. Johnny, that's The Last Dragon. And The Glow, anything else you want to mention before we call it a night?
I just hope, like, I know most of you have not seen this movie. And I'm hoping if you tuned in, you have seen this movie, or you're going to watch this movie. Because make it like an 80s night. Pick a couple of good 80s movies if you want. Hit me up on Twitter. I could give you a couple of good movies to pair this up with. I would recommend, like, Cannonball Run, because you get some great Jackie Chan karate thrown in there. I can name a couple of them to just pair this up with and have some fun and have like a good 80s like schlock fest.
Was there any other movies that Berry Gordy produced? Like, this is Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
No, but like you could pair this up with like Break Into Electric Boogaloo, which gets a lot of flack for, you know, being the Electric Boogaloo title, but it would be pair excellent with this movie.
Other breaking movies, I think, would actually.
Yeah. So
his filmography. He also produced Lady Sings the Blues, The Bingo Long Traveling All Stars, and Motor Kings. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I guess like look, Berry Gordy only needed to produce one movie in my life, because it's been a staple of my life, right? Like, I might not be able to watch Johnny Dangerously on Blu-ray, but I can watch The Last Dragon.
That's right. It's still out there. I watched it on Amazon Prime just a few weeks ago. So take John's recommendation. If you want to have some fun, check out The Last Dragon. But that's all we got for you here this week, folks, on Backtracks Theme Music. Catch us on Twitter, at BT Theme Music. You can also catch John and I on our Aerosmith show, Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited, where we're breaking down the entire Aerosmith catalog. But until next time, on behalf of John Mariano, my name is Corey Morissette, leaving us today with a couple of lines from Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Good night, everybody.
Am I the meanest?
Sure enough.
Am I the prettiest?
Sure enough.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Sure enough.
Well, who am I?
Sure enough.
Who am I?
Sure enough.
I can't hear you.
Shogun!
Shogun of Harlem. Yes!